relationships, religion, Chris Harrington's very real reality. This is the good news on Glenn Klein Online.
In store, love is the drug, and I need to score. Showing up, hit them run. Boy meets girl, where the beat goes on. Stitched up tight, can't shake weak. Love is the drug, got a hook on me. Oh, catch that buzz. Love is the drug I'm thinking of.
I've ruined that song for Chris Harrington forever. Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein Online. It is Hump Day, Wednesday, January 16th, 2013. The only January 16th, 2013 in the history of the world. Yes, it's always an historic moment when we welcome the intermediator from Nacogdoches, Texas, the ever-healing, please say hello to our good friend, Chris Harrington.
Good evening.
All right, so how are you doing, shoulder boy?
I'm getting along all right. You know, I'm not throwing a discus today, but, you know, I'm not sleeping on the floor anymore. I'm up on the couch, and, you know, it's working.
But you like sleeping on the floor.
I like sleeping on the floor, but
you don't like to have to sleep on the floor.
I don't like to have to sleep on the floor. That's right. Yeah, I like having choices.
Well, do you care to share with the beautiful humans the relative good report that you had from the doctor in Houston this week?
I did. I had a really good report. It was my 4-week report, and what he said was everything's doing great. He still feels like he's a genius. I, however, might still be an idiot and mess it up. So he wants to make sure that I'm still not going to do anything for another 4 weeks, and so no physiotherapy until the 8th week. And even then, he still wants to check me one more time and make sure that everything's doing as it should. He's done a lot of research in this area, and he says for this shoulder surgery, for your what's it called? Your cuff.
your rotator cuff?
Rotator cuff, yeah. He says it's a problem of letting it settle in and re-engage and attach. And he says you just simply need to make sure that you don't re-tear it or do anything to it. Let it go ahead and go through its healing process. You know, 10, 12, 14 weeks, whatever you can stand to let it just work through. And but he did start me on my first preliminary exercise. I can now dangle my arm and spin it in a 4-inch circle.
Nice.
So.
Well, you know, one of the things that I like about the medium of radio is that if you're going to log on to a radio show or tune it in on an actual radio, you've got to listen.
Yeah.
As opposed to television or film or YouTube or video of any kind. So, because we're not Skyping right now, people cannot see your condition. Could you please describe the kind of sling you're in? What the
sure.
contraption you have?
I've got a little bumper that's velcroed to my chest, and it creates about a 6-inch little hill that my arm actually sits against, so it's away from my body. And then I have a velcroed sling that velcros onto that and velcros around my neck so that my arm is essentially locked in to a position that's you know, right next to my side, and it can't be pulled out, and it can't be pulled forward, and it can't be pulled back, and that way it's pretty stabilized. And I'm in it 24 hours a day. I take it off to get in the bathtub and in the shower, and you know, to change clothes.
And when you do the showering and the bathing and the clothes changing,
yeah,
are you incredibly careful not to move it?
Absolutely terrified the entire time. I wouldn't want to go through this again for anything. I mean, granted, it's not a burn. You know, it's not a lot of things that I would consider way worse. Burn, I consider just the worst possible thing. You know, being opened up for heart surgery where they crack your chest, that would be way worse than this. But as pain goes and as things go that I've had in my own life, I've had it really, really easy. And, you know, previous to this, I only had a knee surgery, which was pretty easy. And I had my gallbladder out, but it was, you know, they whipped it out through a little, you know, 1-inch hole in my side. I've had, you know, very good fortune as far as my health is concerned. And so this has been the worst thing that I've had. And I wouldn't want to go there again. Of course, I'm almost 60, so, you know, I'm just at the beginning of these travels. And I want to make sure that I have the best shot at, you know, at a good repair job. And he says that'll only happen if I don't mess it up.
All right, so, but he has given you permission to walk and to work things
right
below your waist.
He didn't operate on my legs. He only operated on my shoulders, so don't swing my shoulders.
Are you doing any ab work?
I can't really successfully do that yet because it pulls your shoulders up. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to start going over and, you know, when I get the okay at 8 weeks, and doing some leg presses. You know, already I do, like, toe presses and stuff, you know, where I'm like sitting in a doorway and I can hold on with my left hand and then push up off my toes. So I do a couple things here and there, but anything that engages my shoulder, I have to just stay away from it. So pretty much I'm just hanging out.
All right, well, you're making progress. And
I put the dishes away.
That's good.
I vacuumed the floor
with only your left hand, I assume.
Yeah, only my left hand. Yeah,
yeah. Okay, just want to make sure of that.
Yeah.
Well, I have some good news. And of course, program is called The Good News. And I'm very excited to report
about getting religion.
I got religion. I got rid of it. But this band that you guys that have been listening to the webcast are familiar with, I'm going to see them tomorrow night. The Yonder Mountain String Band. I cannot recommend them enough. Just YouTube them, Google them. Yonder Mountain String Band. Right here. On The Good News on Glenn Klein Online.
Well, I don't need more guilt here in my life. How the hell is that supposed to help me find the light? And I don't need you preaching at me day and night about the way I look, the way I walk, the way I dress, the way I talk. There's something that you think you see like you ever looked at me. You say you got it figured out, you seem awful proud about it. Never really trusted folks who have to talk so loud.
That opening line of that song, Chris, is so powerful. How the hell is guilt supposed to make us see the light?
Yeah.
Guilt is a motivator. First of all, I'm going to Orlando tomorrow night to see them with my son Joseph. And then on Saturday night, they're in St. Petersburg, and my son Jacob is flying in from California. We're kind of into Yonder Mountain String Band.
All right.
And PBS is doing a special with them, I found out yesterday. They're going to be recording Yonder in this cave in Tennessee. That is a natural amphitheater that the acoustics in there are perfect.
Awesome.
So you guys that are into PBS and are into music, check that out. Let's listen to a few more seconds of the Bluegrass Jam Band.
Supposed to help me find the light, and I don't need you preaching every day and night about the things
what I will and what I won't. There's fire in your eyes, sir, and it chills me to the bone. You say you got it figured out, and you seem so damn proud about it. I never really trusted folks who have to talk so loud.
I remember, by the way, that's our answer to religion tonight, the Yonder Mountain String Band. We like to deal with that from time to time, that whole middle issue of relationships, religion, and reality. I was in the middle of one of the lowest points of my life one winter. They're always here in Florida around this time of year. And it was just after I had gotten divorced, and I was in a very, very bad place. And Yonder, actually yesterday, was the anniversary of my divorce, 9 years. And I was in a really bad place. And somehow I got myself to the concert here in Tampa. And just being around those guys and seeing people enjoy themselves and celebrate and being around an atmosphere that I was familiar with was very helpful to me at the time. How important is that, Chris, when people are going through tough times to get themselves around things that they're familiar with and comfortable?
Well, you got to have things that you can use to anchor yourself so you don't get too lost. It's pretty easy to get down, you know, about your health or about your job or about finances or about your emotions. It doesn't really take much, and especially in the fall and winter because of diminishing light and also because of the seasons like we've been talking about, Christmas and New Year's holidays, Thanksgiving even, it can be very depressing.
And Halloween before that.
Your expectations are high, and what comes through is sometimes pretty low.
So between Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's, of course, everybody's over-consuming. And as you said, the lack of sun, even in the South, which is obviously the sunshine is much more prevalent, is a huge factor. I mean, people are going through some stuff right now all over the planet, or certainly in the Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah.
And you can take steps, you guys. I mean, between exposing yourself on purpose to ultraviolet rays, like we're sitting here at the Sun Bar. I've been tanning on purpose, Chris, frequently recently, and exercising on purpose, and on purpose watching what I consume. And you know the kind of stress that I've been under.
Sure.
And, well, I haven't put a gun in my mouth yet. That's a good thing.
Yeah. That just brings up the whole gun controversy. I don't want to get into it, but it does bring it up. And we've got so many controversies right now in the United States on so many different levels. It's easy to get overburdened with just the fact that we're not really discussing these things. You know, they're looming and pending and constantly, they're like constellations that you just can't get your mind around. It can be overwhelming.
I heard Dick Cavett, the famous talk show host, interviewed on the radio this morning, and they were talking about the gun debate because he had written a column about how he had a particular affection for this Derringer that he had. No, it wasn't a Derringer. It was a... what was the pistol that the German soldiers had?
The Luger?
The Luger. He loved this Luger. And he had gotten rid of it a while ago. But Dick Cavett has suffered with clinical depression through his life. And he talked about how thankful he was that he did not have a gun at certain times of his life. Because when you have that option there, it is a very quick option. And so, listen, if you guys are feeling low, and if you're feeling like life isn't worth living anymore and that you want to end it, at least do yourself a favor and reach out to somebody and talk about it first. We've dealt over the years with this subject extensively, especially with our friend Ron Fox in California, who called the show many years ago. Contemplating suicide, and we walked through that. You got to know this, that no matter what you do, your status in the eyes of the Almighty as righteous and sinless and holy and perfect is not affected at all by what you do. Ron, and we told him, basically, dude, follow your heart, man. I mean, just you're good to go with God. You just got to do what you want to do. And then he called, and of course, you know, we had him on for like a half an hour, and we didn't know what he was going to do. And then he called us back a couple weeks later and said that he decided not to kill himself to hang around for his kids and his grandkids.
Wow.
Which we thought was pretty good result of that conversation.
Yeah.
So reach out to somebody. If you guys want to call us tonight, the phone lines are open. If you're listening live right now on Wednesday night on January 16th at 9:16, as I look on the clock here on the East Coast of the United States of America, feel free to call. You can call us at 1-800-436-3260. That is the Glenn Klein Online toll-free hotline. Sean O'Halloran is in studio and ready to take your calls at 1-800-436-3260. Or if you're calling from other places other than North America, you can call, too, at 813-425-5773. Do you want to say hello? I'm signaling to Sean. He didn't know he didn't know that particular hand signal. How are you, Seanage?
Tired.
You're tired.
Well, man.
You look good. You need a little sun. You need a little tanning. What are you doing? Were you muted there?
I was muted.
Oh.
There you go.
He said he's tired. But you look good.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks for doing this.
Well, awesome. What are we up to tonight?
All right. Well, here's the other interesting experience I had today.
Okay.
I went to a marketing seminar.
Okay.
To learn how to do a email newsletter. You guys are going to notice a difference in the coming weeks for our newsletter. And this is part of the plan that we've been working on all along to where I can actually stand on my own 2 feet financially. For you guys that have been listening and paying attention to the show, it's you guys. When you see a stylized, nicely graphiced newsletter come onto your computer screen, most of the time it's from a company called Constant Contact, and that was who hosted the seminar today. And it was tremendous, man. I mean, it really stretched me, bro.
All right. Well, what's the lesson there that you got from the seminar?
The lesson that I got on the seminar is there's a lot of technology out there, there's a lot of knowledge out there, and that if you or I will avail myself of it, a lot of people can benefit.
Very good. Very good. Yeah, definitely we need to touch base. I think, though, there's also the possibility, you know, of a loss of privacy. You know, I get a lot of phone calls and contacts from people who are trying to sell me lots of really cool stuff, and especially you know, the different lobbyists or different organizations or institutions are always trying to put the touch out there and get some, and I appreciate that, and I tell them I appreciate your work. I'm already giving in other areas and doing all the support work I can right now, so thanks, but no thanks. And that takes up, you know, some amount of time, and sometimes it's difficult to always maintain that that pleasant, neutral, sensitive sense of appreciating the work that people are going through in order to support their organization.
Right on.
Yeah.
Speaking of organization,
sure.
You posted some organized thoughts today.
Sure.
On Facebook. You know what Germa Colston posted about you after last week's show? He said, Chris Harrington talks like he writes. Dude, this thing was so convoluted is not the right word. But
okay.
It was so well, it was instructive.
Okay.
But it was so voluminous in its material.
Right. I pack a lot on a page.
You pack a lot. That's what you do. And if we can use that gun term here again.
You bet.
Yeah, in fact, it was pretty much impossible to read on the computer. So
yeah, you have to actually use the computer itself to blow it up, so you can actually read it. I do that on purpose so people can just actually print it out and read it at home, you know. But it's one way to get the materials out there for free.
So maybe they would have taught me this at Constant Contact if I would have known to ask. How do you take something that's posted on Facebook and blow it up?
Well, there are a couple ways of doing that. First off, you could just print it. You know, that's one way to handle it from the very beginning. But the other thing you can do is you can do Control Plus. So, like, if I go over to my computer right now, and I am I'm going to go to the one that says dealing with what is in front of you, and I punch on that one, and then while I have it up on the page, and it has a double page, part of it is my name is on the right hand side, and the piece itself is published over on the left hand side, and I do Control Plus, and what that does is it makes it one little bit bigger, and every time I do Control Plus, that makes it bigger and bigger so you can read it, and that way you're able to move the page up and down, and you can read the whole thing.
You can also hold down Control and scroll the wheel on your mouse.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, you can scroll it up and down to change the
page
size.
Wow, cool.
All right, so there's your computer lesson, ladies and gentlemen.
And tonight, there you have it.
All right, so we're going to take our break early tonight.
Okay.
And then I know you've got probably a list of 10 things or something.
Well, we didn't finish last week's.
Well, we never even started last week.
Yeah, well, we got to the introduction, but we're ready.
Because,
so let's do the break.
Because I got to my 10 list.
Yeah.
Top 10 list of the things
that
I've gained in my intermediation.
Yeah.
We'll be right back, right here, on the good news on Glenn Klein Online.
Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine.
I need to laugh, and when the sun is out, I've got something I can laugh about. I feel good in a special way. I'm in love, and it's a sunny day.
Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine.
We take a walk.
The good news on Glenn Klein Online is brought to you in part by the Guru of Gratitude.com. Get paid being nice. The Guru of Gratitude.com.
Good day, sunshine. Sunshine, good day, sunshine.
Then we lie beneath the shade.
You guys can get paid being nice. You can call toll free 888-493-7482. That number once again, 888-493-7482. Get paid being nice.
Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine.
The Guru of Gratitude.com. Getting paid being nice is only a click away. Oh, the Beatles classic. You got to love it. Good day, sunshine. This is the good news on Glenn Klein Online. Chris Harrington's reality. Sean O'Halloran in tow here in the studio, the Bay of the Holy Spirit. Chris.
Yes, sir.
Take it away.
All right. Last time we were talking about stress, and I did a kind of a takeoff on Covey's concept of when you're trying to fill up time, space, or an area, or a sense of things. He said you can put a big thing into, say, for example, into a box, and then you can put a little bit smaller things and smaller things, and then you can even fill up the spaces in between with sand, and then eventually you can even put water in it, and water will fill it all up, and now it's completely full. And I think that's a wonderful image for what he was attempting to pursue. But I wanted to look back for a second before we filled it with water and before we filled it with sand. If we were trying to de-stress ourselves and we reverse engineered the process of filling our lives with things or with events, what if we wanted to de-stress, all right, so that we wanted to fill those spaces with more, for lack of a better term, emptiness, you know, to empty out the stress, to get rid of the stresses. And then we talked about how it's necessary to have some amount of stress because, for example, if you don't stress your bones and muscles enough, you can end up with osteoporosis.
Right.
So you have to have enough stress on things in order to keep them flexible, in order to keep them in good working order. But you don't want to overstress things. Even metal will overstress over time and break down. So it's important to stress just enough. And for those people who are trying to figure out what their stress level is and what they can handle, they have lots of online tests that you can take for stress, and they assign a number, so much for a divorce, so much for a hospitalization, so much for the loss of a family member. And so you can see that over time, over a year, for example, you might accrue, you know, anywhere from 200 to 1,000 points on this on these scales for how much stress you have in your life. And they'll say that makes you a candidate for a heart attack or a stroke or for you know, an ulcer or any number of things, hair loss. Lots of things can happen due to stress. So there's a need for us to de-stress our lives. And so I looked at Cubby's drawing, and I said, well, what if before we filled it up with sand and with water, what if we looked at the spaces in between as comfort zones where we can kind of flake out or do something that we enjoy or provide ourselves with a little bit of sustenance, emotional sustenance, or fulfill our emotional bank account by doing something that fulfills us as human beings. And I made a list of 10 things that we could think about in on the road to emotional recovery in terms of stress. So I was going to go over those last time, and we kind of ran out of time, so now we got a little bit more time this time. What to do then? Number one, list your most easily offloaded stresses and let them go. Now, this is, again, you know, a lot of these things are, it's intellectually, it's a lot easier to think about it than it is to do it, but I'm thinking about we know what our stresses are for the most part, and it's very much like looking at, say, for example, when you were in grade school and you'd hand your paper, or when you're in junior high or high school, and you'd hand your paper to the teacher, and the teacher would mark in red on your paper, and then you would get the paper back and you could see what it was that you did that was maybe not as effective, and you could have done something a little bit better. And so then you were supposed to correct your paper and hand it back in. Well, what they found over time was that all that did was give people an opportunity to avoid looking at their paper, because only 5% of the red marks that were put on a paper were ever really seen by a student. 95% of them went unseen. People avoided that.
Mm-hmm.
So they came up with an idea called the 6+1 traits, which allows you to say, well, let's go over the paper several times and we'll tackle a group of things at a time. Say, for example, just the graphic part of it, or maybe just the spelling mistakes, or maybe just the a part of the grammar like punctuation or something like that. And that way the student wouldn't be overwhelmed, and maybe you'd only look at 5 or 6 or 7 things at a time, and the student could then consume that and digest it and learn from it, and then go back through and make the paper more effective by going through another session of another round of editing.
All right.
And I think that's what we're looking at here, is handling things a little bit at a time, but writing them down so you can see what it is that you think are your major stressing points the things that are maybe most getting to you. You probably are skipping over some things. It's like a hangnail. You have a hangnail all day, and it's hurting you, but you're not thinking about it because you're too busy. And then at night you lie down, and all of a sudden it's throbbing like a monster, and you think, oh my gosh, this is killing me. Why didn't this affect me all day? I was too busy to think about it.
Right.
The same way with the stressors that are really stressing us in our life. We're so busy trying to put out the fires that we see that the ones that are really getting to us, the ones that are underneath, those things we skip by.
So what would be a good analogy to a hangnail that is a common daily stressor that we could easily take care of?
Well, say, for example, if you have on your car, here's one for me that happened to me. I needed to put the license plate on my car. But, of course, that meant that I had to use a screwdriver with one hand, hold the license plate, which I couldn't do because my hand had surgery, and I couldn't get over there and fix it. And what it finally got down to was that I had gone a month. Of course, I hadn't driven my car either. I'd gone a month. I had my license plates there, but I hadn't put them on my car. So as the days progressed beyond my surgery, I was capable of doing a little bit more, and I felt a little bit more capable. But this whole time, it was eating on me that I needed to put these the license plates on there. And so what I finally did was I figured out I could sit down on the ground behind the car and put my foot up on the license plate and turn the screw and hold it there so that I didn't have to try to hold it with two hands, because I couldn't hold it with two hands.
You think that would have been under the genius doctor's acceptable things for you to do with your left hand?
Yeah, with my left hand, yeah. All I was doing was just screwing a screw in.
All right, so something as simple as changing your license plate is adding so much stress.
I couldn't drive anywhere without the thought that I was going to get a ticket.
Right.
Even though I had and I needed to go to town, you know, because I had to go do some banking and stuff. So how am I going to do that?
So just
I'm going to take a chance and I'll be thinking the whole time, oh my God, I hope a cop doesn't see me. Of course, if the police see you and you're looking at them going, please don't look at me, and then they're going, that guy looks like he's pulled a bank job, and then they got to pull you over because you look suspicious.
Right, because then you get paranoid and stuff,
yourself.
Right? Yeah, you get paranoid. All right, so number one, of course, in the David Letterman top 10 style,
right?
You got to go 10 to 1, but we're going number 1.
I just list things in the way that it hits me.
All right, Chris Harrington list of the way things hit. The number 10 thing to do and to deal with in de-stressing is take care of the simple things that are easy to take care of.
Yeah, anything you can let go of or you can just deal with, do that first.
Quickly.
All right.
Yeah. Okay, number 9.
Number two. Is helpful because it names the problems. But as the list is gone through, others now stand out. So once I had taken care of the thing about the license plate, the reality is it hit me. When I sat in the car, I had been putting off going anywhere for 3 weeks because I didn't want to have to drive my car with just one hand.
All right.
The reality was I was pretty scared to drive it.
Okay, all right. So it's number two is that by dealing with the very simple thing, you get to a deeper issue.
Yeah.
Okay. How do you deal with that?
Well, it's the same thing. It now becomes the simpler issue. I mean, it's an emotional issue, but the reality is that now that I'm there and I'm facing it, now what I have to do is I've got to say to myself, okay, what's the situation here? All right. I'm going to take the simplest path to town. I'm going to slow down the car. I'm going to make sure that I'm not going anywhere fancy and I'm not trying to pull any maneuvers. I'm not trying to parallel park or anything, you know. I'm just going to, like, pull into a space, go in, do my business, and make it happen.
And even I
went to three places and I was back at the house in an hour and a half.
I remember talking to you after that happened, and the level of relief that you had that nothing bad happened was tremendous. Plus, the stress was relieved because...
Yeah.
You accomplished that goal.
It felt great.
Yeah, okay. Number 3.
All right, number 3. Prepare to deal with larger issues by having smaller successes.
Like driving to town.
I don't want to minimize the things I've been successful at. It's like when we were talking about making the list in the first place, you know, just on your daily routine list. The reality is that if I'm successful at a minimal lift, I can then, you know, turn up the heat a little bit as I go. But if I haven't had a success and someone's asking me to do something that I absolutely just am terrified of doing, I'm not going to be able to be successful at it because I'm too afraid.
Bro, when you originally proposed that I should start making lists,
sure,
the concept of making the list stressed me out. So then you said,
oh, yeah,
then you said to me, well, have one of the things on your list being making the list.
Yeah.
And they were very mundane, very menial things like taking,
oh, yeah,
out the garbage and making the list and,
yeah, things that you just can't fail at.
Yeah, but or you could if you don't do them.
Yeah, right, right.
But then of course you told me to give myself a reward if I did all five. Now those things on the list these many weeks or months now. Now it's things like taking care of the e-newsletter that I have to do for one of my clients.
Right.
And so, I mean, it ain't taking out the garbage anymore, pretty much.
Right. There are much more complex issues. That's right.
Right. But I get to go to Yonder Mountain String Band concert as my reward. So the rewards,
absolutely,
have become bigger too.
Yeah, and they all should. That's the reality of the situation. Is that the whole process grows and grows until you are taking responsibility and owning what you do. And that's, you know, to me, freedom is having options. And when you exercise your responsibility, it creates options for you, and that's what gives you your freedom.
I cannot tell you how stress relieving it is to be organized, to make a list, and to actually check the things. And by the way, not only am I now getting the things on a list accomplished, I'm getting the other things that used to be on my list accomplished without having to make a list for them.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. You create time and energy in your life by being more effective with what you've got.
We get so stressed out about the things that are just the most basic things to do, like the laundry, doing the dishes, or changing a freaking license plate.
Or a light bulb. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how much stuff that we avoid all the time.
And it adds stress when you avoid it.
And it adds up, too.
It doesn't de-stress, it adds stress.
That's right.
All right, number four.
All right, number four, realize that some stresses are self-deliveries. You know, that we do a lot of the stress ourselves, our avoidance mechanisms, our attitudes about things. You know, my own personal point of view about things is that it's our emotions that leads to our thinking that leads to our actions. All right? And so what happens is if our emotions are set up on a curve that is inflexible, dogmatic, rigid, what'll happen is that in situations where we come up against something that is an exception to the rule, for example, that's something that you like to use a lot. When you come up against an exception to the rule and you have to bend yourself, all of a sudden you're completely flipping out. Whereas in the very beginning, if you had the sense that things are always this way until they're not, you know, instead of it being dogmatic, it's like it kind of leans this way. What'll happen is that sounds like a relative morality, but in fact, what'll happen instead is that that means that everything fits into your paradigm and that you can understand that even though you might not do it, somebody else under the right conditions might do something that you would never choose to do. Even you might choose to do what you would never choose to do under the right conditions. You just haven't been under those conditions yet.
The right or wrong conditions.
Yeah. So it's life can be extremely difficult and very demanding and put you in situations that will be just completely upside down from where you thought you'd ever be.
And how fair is it for people to impose their experiences and their judgments on you when they have no idea what you're going through?
Well, not only that, it's not fair of them to do that simply because they can't predict on the other side of some infinite amount of time that it's going to work out for you. You know, what will happen is, and you and I have this discussion all the time, and I'm attempting all the time to go, you know, you're only giving me part of what I need to know,
right,
in order to assist you in making a decision. And we might go through several phone calls, several layers, and then finally we get to aha, and here's what's underneath it all. Well, if I had made a decision way back at the beginning of a series of phone calls or discussions or text messages or whatever, Facebook messages, then neither one of us would have had a clue what was going on. And maybe later on we really don't either, but much better clue after we've gone through many, many, many layers of information.
So you're just not purposely trying to frustrate me by saying that?
No.
Okay.
I'm doing that on purpose because you're taking, well, it does two things. Number one, it relieves the stress from me because as you become more responsible, you call me less. Okay?
Yeah.
But secondly, what it does is it goes through those layers. It's like the layers of information. I always used to deal with, not to say that you're a child, but go back to my...
No, you can say that. That's fine.
My concept about about the red marks on the page, because I always used to do that. For the first 15 years or so of my teaching career, I always used to put the red marks on the paper. I never did that after the first 15 years because it was a waste of time. But what would happen is the kids would, when I would talk to them about something in particular, like say, for example, all the misspelled words on a page, and a kid might give me one paper and it has 50 misspelled words on it, right? He's just tragically going way too fast and not even using the computer to help him out. And then he'd bring the paper back and I'd say, well, let's fix this other thing. And he'd say, why didn't we deal with all this at one time? And I'll say, because what would happen is if I gave you all the things that you needed all at one time, all in one day, it would completely break you down. That's why they give you 13 years of school. That's the way all of us are. We need to have things incremental and not given to us all at one time because the load of information that we need in order to operate more effectively is so overwhelming, and the depth of knowledge and understanding and empathy that we need to really operate effectively is so overwhelming that we would literally be, just taken down.
Right, and the other point is, of course, that you're not ready for algebra until you've gone through, basic addition and subtraction.
You're not ready for prime time. Yeah. None of us are, and that's the truth of it, And you and I kid back and forth about how much we're going through and stuff, and it's great sharing with you about that stuff, but I don't want to see everything in my entire life that I need to know today. I don't want to know all that. I'd rather see it incrementally as I can digest it. It's hard enough getting at 10 or 20 or 30 things at a time, but if I had the next 100,000 things I needed to learn today, it would break my bones.
The people that I've been sharing with about what I've been learning, and
sure,
what I've been learning has been literally front and center for these many months. People have acknowledged that I needed to learn this.
Yeah.
But there has been very little acknowledgement on the other side that, you know what, that's something I can relate to. Which, I mean, that's just been my observation. How few people go down this road? And what happens to people? Do they just become stunted and just kind of be fossilized?
Well, in actuality, over time, what we talk about, the maturing process, what that means is that, life gets to you. You can work towards it, but it's coming at you whether you like it or not. And so these expressive lessons that we have that, are... events in our lives. They're things that make us deal with our own insecurities and our own bad habits and our own institutionalized way of looking at things and our own addictive thoughts and feelings. And so when life comes at you and you have to deal with something and the reality of things is another way than you thought it was, it's perplexing. It makes you wrestle. And life is unforgiving. You can say, well, I wish that this never happened, or I wish it wasn't this way. I wish that this wasn't the reality of my life from now on out, or I wish that this had, gone a way that was more acceptable. All these different points of security are completely broken through. Your firewall gets broken through, and life just says, I'm in. And there's not anything you can do about it. Now you're going to have to survive accepting that, understanding that, living with that, and going through it. And so life will bring that at you. To me, it's helpful in a lot of ways to at least get a heads up, you know, reading self-help books and going to seminars and asking big questions and checking for yourself will assist you in getting there. And maybe you can get some answers that will work better for you than just the ones you come up with off the cuff in an emergency, you know, with a little bit that you have. I think I'd rather have a little bit more training to be able to deal with things.
Number five.
Yeah. Number five. Let's see. What things have you been putting off that are now emergencies? Now, this is a point that Cubby brings up. You know, things that used to be, you know, things that you could have dealt with them on time, but you didn't. And so now they're things that are absolute emergencies. And they're in their own realm. And so the paper that I said, created, Dealing with What is in Front of You, has that. I use different vocabulary words than Cubby, but that's because I'm going at a different point. But I think that the concept is definitely there, and I probably am, you know, pulling from my reading of his work in terms of bouncing off of it and really reflecting on that stuff. But it's really important to look and see what you've done to yourself, because people say, I've had people say, I work better under pressure. And then I watch them, and they're pulling their hair out, and they're freaking out, and they're drinking 10 cups of coffee, and they're smoking 6 packs of cigarettes, and their life is completely in turmoil, and they say that they work better under pressure. I don't necessarily see that.
You beg to differ?
I beg to differ, yeah. Number six, read Covey and others and get some perspective. That is, do some homework. I think that if you just look at the things that are in front of you and start doing some homework, you know, it was after I'd already been taking all my pain meds and stuff. Of course, I was on pain meds, so I wasn't thinking clearly. But by the time that I was already kind of going through some mental, emotional anguish about it, I finally came to the point where I said, you know, something's not right here. And I started looking up the medicines I had, and they were, you know, ganging up on me emotionally. And I knew that I was in trouble, and this was like, you know, I was heading towards addiction, or I was heading towards being overwhelmed, or both. And I thought, this has got to happen. I'm going to have to work through this. And the next 3, 4, 5 days is not going to be a pretty sight, but it's going to be better if I work through it now rather than wait 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 weeks. So that's what had to happen. But I had to do a little bit of homework in order to convince myself, because I know this can be hard to believe, but I'm very hard-headed.
that's not hard to believe at all, Christopher.
Yeah. Number seven. Plan every day to lower stress and increase recovery effectiveness. So once you've made a list, then the trick is actually using the thing. A lot of people, what they do is they pull the old trick of, I lost my list, I can't believe it, and I can't remember what was on it, so now I'm just going to have to wing it.
I lost my list.
Instead of, like, at least in grade school, somebody will say, the dog ate my homework, right?
Well, they can't say that anymore because all the homework's on the computer. So
yeah, it's on the computer. Yeah, my dog ate my hard drive.
My dog ate my iPad.
Yeah.
All right, so,
Number eight. Each relieved stress with a better habit. And I think this is something that's kind of hard to believe, but it leaves an empty space there in your life when you get rid of a bad habit. You know, something that has to go. And nature abhors a vacuum, so what will happen is something else will rush in there. So you give up food, but you take up cigarettes or gum, and then they rip your teeth out because you got caps or whatever. So there's always something that's going to fill that. You have to think about that ahead of time. What would I rather be doing right now? And let's work towards that. And one way to relieve that stress then is to actually fill up the space with the thing that you would like to see there, so that eventually you don't have time for that previous stress. You're now spending all of your time doing this thing that you prefer.
You want to give an example?
Well, you can displace things. For example, getting rid of overeating by working out. You know, sometimes you take up a sport, you take up frisbee, you go get a dog, and so instead of sitting around eating hot dogs, now you're sitting around, now you're running around with your dog, and you're playing frisbee out on the grass you know, out at the park. But you've got to start filling your life, you know. So one way to do it is to get, you know, some workout clothes and, you know, get a Frisbee and get a dog and call somebody and start filling up that time. And maybe the first couple of days you hardly do any of it, but by the end of the week, make sure it's, you know, an hour or two per day so that you can actually give some time to something that you would rather be doing, something that's more healthy, at whatever level that it is.
All right, so here's in my ever reaching attempt to get away from nicotine.
Yeah.
You said, so I'm backing off of nicotine.
Yeah.
And you said when you have a nicotine attack, get down and do 50 push-ups.
Some people that works for them.
That's what you told me to do. In other words, replace that desire to have a smoke with doing 50 push-ups.
Yeah. I think there's a whole series of things having to do with self-talk. Would you rather be able to walk further? Would you rather be able to run further? Would you rather be able to live longer? Would you rather be able to breathe more easily? So, you know, you've got to keep in mind a whole, you know, stash of things that are going to be helpful in your backpack, you know, in your emotional backpack, things that you're going to use as weapons against your previous thoughts, because you're having to undo how you felt about something, you know, and you're used to it. You know, like a friend of mine said, you don't know me. I've been doing this since I was 5 years old. It's a part of me. It's who I am. Yeah. So, you know, but
dude,
I know
suck.
That
you
at a
suck.
Certain level, you know, we learn things. What did you do until you were five? You know, and so what happens is we learn something, you know, and it's comfortable and we like it. And if it's something that's unhealthy or something that's stressing you or something that's taking up your life, well, then you've got to find something else that you like better.
What do you say to somebody who says in talking about a habit that is clearly unhealthy and could potentially shorten your life, that they say everybody's got to die from something?
Well, the best one, I actually did say that to somebody one time when I was about 16 or 17 years old, trying to excuse my behavior in a certain area. And what he said is, yeah, but I'm not getting on the bus today. And I think that's, you know, that's a fair statement. You know, the question is, and I think some people actually are afraid to live longer because there doesn't seem to be, on the outset, there doesn't seem to be much of a trade-off as you get older and older and you get more and more unhealthy.
Right.
There doesn't seem to be a something that's a trade-off for getting older. So,
well,
you know,
I mean, we have to acknowledge the fact that when we're doing things habitually without attempting to break the old patterns,
right,
that there is an element of death wish.
Yeah, there's a death wish involved.
Yeah,
there, right?
I mean,
but a lot of it, really, you know, it's like we were talking about Johnny Carson the other day, and Johnny Carson was really angry at himself for getting emphysema. He says, "I can't believe it, those stupid cigarettes." And it's like, dude, but you knew that. He knew that already. It's just that he thought, his biographer said that Johnny thought that he'd be the one that was the exception to the rule. He would not get it.
All right, so
and there are people who don't.
Well, this whole issue of a death wish,
ties
perfectly into the issue of people, and we all have this obviously on some level of self-loathing.
Yeah.
What is the most effective way to deal with self-loathing?
Oh, man, I'll tell you, one of the coolest things I ever heard anybody say, it was Winky Prattney was talking about people who think too lowly of themselves, right?
Yes.
He says one of their weapons of choice to continue that thought is that those people who think too highly of themselves are conceited because they only think about themselves. But the rationalization is if you're thinking about yourself in a low spot, right?
Yes.
It's about me, I'm low, it's about me, I'm the bottom, I'm the worst, I'm this, I'm that. Every other word is I. So it doesn't matter if you're thinking lowly of yourself or highly of yourself, it's still thinking about you. So it's another form of conceit. In fact, a lot of times people who are really down on themselves will go out of their way to prove that they're right, to make sure that other people know that they're worthless. And so they will work really hard at it. I had a kid one day at school, and we had had a big talk with him at 8 o'clock in the morning. By 10:30, he was back in the principal's office getting himself kicked out of school. And I said, I'm trying to figure out. You were just in here a little while ago, and we had this all figured out, what you were going to do and how it was going to go, and you were really going to fly right. He said, I know, but when I walked out of here, I realized I have a reputation to uphold. People think I'm the crazy kid, so I got to do crazy stuff every day. If I weren't doing that, who would I be?
Wow.
And that was his rationalization for getting himself kicked out of school.
Wow. Self-fulfilling prophecies, ladies and gentlemen.
Yep, got to have it.
Number nine.
See each former stress as an entanglement you do not want to revisit. Like I said, when I work with people who are in jail and they come out and they go, man, what a piece of cake, I always go, I'm so sorry. And they go, why? And I said, well, because that means you're going to probably go back in. What I wanted you to say was, oh, my God, while I was in jail, I was not able to sleep with my girlfriend or my wife. Oh, my God, while I was in jail, I didn't have any good food. Oh, my God, while I was in jail, I wasn't able to get up and walk around and go see my grandparents, and I missed my grandmother when she died while I was in jail. I need you to see all those things, because the costs are going to be what benefits you here in terms of letting you know that you don't want to do that again. You're coming out with all this bravado is only going to land you right back where you started, because you know what? It was no big deal, and you'd be willing to do it again.
Yep.
That's how tough you are in front of your friends.
Yep.
It's hard.
What's the thing that causes people to realize that they don't want to do that again?
Pain.
Pain.
I know it's really bad, but pain. You know, when you totally stress out, you notice how people who, like, their whole lives, they would go, man, these guys and their silly food and all that crazy with those, you know, veggie burgers and stuff. That is so stupid. Then they have a heart attack, right? Then they're preaching it to you about health food and about kelp and seaweed and it's like, dude.
So what you're
as
saying
is it's them, right?
And
they've been through major pain and they had their chest cracked open. All of a sudden they're telling you about
right.
The same thing that they were before. That's a bunch of baloney. We don't need that stuff.
So,
we don't need no stinking health food. We're tough.
So when we're
chainsaws.
So when we're experiencing pain, we should not necessarily be in pain avoidance mode, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I don't think that that's the best thing to do. I think that instead of medicating yourself, that's how we get into so much trouble. You medicate yourself so you don't feel any pain, and you don't feel it. And so you don't learn from it.
All right,
there's nothing there for you.
All right, we got to get to number 10.
Number 10, here we go. Know that whatever is not dealt with compounds with new stresses and new ways, like an interactive drug problem. So before you had a problem yesterday, and now you got a problem today, right? But now you don't have just two problems. Because now you've got the stress of having put it off.
Right.
And the stress of doing it. And the stress of this other thing hanging over you that you don't have time to do because you're busy worrying about this other thing that you're going to try to avoid doing. So now you've got a whole layer of compounded stresses and you still haven't gotten anything done.
Wow. So
and every day you do that, it gets worse and
worse. It's not just 2 days, it's exponentially higher.
Yeah, it's 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, 128, 212. I mean, 256. 512, 1048. Yeah, it just jacks up just like that.
You guys, everybody wants to know how to effectively deal with stress. Go back and listen to this webcast again. Hey, buddy, thank you so much.
Love you.
Love you so much. And you guys can contact us. It's RunningTurtle87. It's Coach at Glenn Klein Online. It is good news on Glenn Klein Online. Thanks for listening. Seanage, thank you. And Lord willing, if the creek don't rise, we will do it again in 1 week's time.
Awesome.
And until that time, this would be Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody!